It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 114. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday, Steelers Nation. Just under 2 weeks until the 2024 NFL Draft kicks off. And Dave, I have a feeling you're even more excited for this show than usual. You're kind of chomping at the bit, as they like to say. Some center talk, some studies, some deep dives you've been doing. So I think we're going to get into it today.
Yeah, I think I have myself a hill to die on today.
Many hills. Yeah, there are a lot of you mountains.
And it comes to Graham Barton and you know, someone that's kind of, I don't want to say polarizing, but just, you know, big discussion about that guy throughout the pre-draft process and obviously kind of trying to link him to the Steelers and all like that. So, you know, it's not going to be a huge hill to die on, but I do want to talk about him today. I want to talk about the center position, specifically if the Steelers don't address that in the first round, what potentially that might look like. I've done a couple of studies I've put up on the site on Steelers Depot the last couple of days. Hopefully people have enjoyed that. I've enjoyed deep diving that. And yeah, I think center's been kind of my hot button, I think, for most of this pre-draft process here. So we'll talk quite a bit about that today and should have some good conversations on it.
For sure. But before we do that, we'll talk about some other Steelers news. Pittsburgh adding to the roster since we last spoke, Dave, signing for the fourth time kicker Matthew Wright, who initially was with Pittsburgh as an undrafted free agent out of Central Florida. Has been on and off the roster, bounced around other teams, but he is back now in Pittsburgh, signed to their offseason roster, a one-year contract. You can offer the details of that deal, but Wright will be the backup kicker for Chris Boswell this summer in training camp.
Alex, I don't think you can go wrong with Wright.
That was bad.
Hey, I'll be here all week trying to bill. Look, a familiar face, as you stated. No threat to Chris Boswell, barring injury or some sort of wheels falling off. Where hasn't he shown up at this point? I mean, he's kicked for several teams. He's nailed a couple of long, 59 yarders, something along those lines. So this is a guy, the team will probably want to take it easy on Chris Boswell throughout the rest of the summer here. And, you know, a guy that you know, a guy that knows what his role will be. Kind of the perfect extra leg, I think, to have in camp here. And if you look at his contract overall, it is the minimum for a player with 3 credited seasons. That means $1.055 million. No signing bonus, no guaranteed money. He knows the deal here. I'm sure when it comes to Chris Boswell and you know, is he likely to make the 53? No, but at least he keeps his leg warmed up in the process there. And in signing him, he entered the rule of 51. He used up all of $70,000 in 2024 salary cap space. So that is the long, the short, the wrong, and the right about Matthew Wright.
He's actually been a pretty decent kicker in the NFL, including with Pittsburgh. That one of the recent stints he had, I want to say in 2022, he had kicked well and got a game ball when they beat Atlanta. He got cut after that game because Boswell got healthy. But yeah, his leg strength has really improved. I remember watching him coming out of Central Florida, and his max was about 51 yards. And as you said, he's kicked a 59-yarder in the NFL elsewhere, I believe, with maybe Chiefs or somewhat Jacksonville, whatever other team he was with. And so the leg strength has really improved with him. But yeah, the reality is Chris Boswell's 33, and that's not incredibly old for a kicker, but it's still 33 years old for a kicker that's been in the league since 2014, 2015 with Pittsburgh. And so you want to manage him. Danny Smith, I think last year, talked about they changed up Boswell's routine. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't think he revealed it, but yeah, you want to make sure you preserve that leg that is getting a bit older and has some mileage on it. So Wright is maybe not just your standard bring in this rookie unknown kicker. He's an accomplished kicker, I think, but certainly, as you said, no threat to Boswell barring something dramatic occurring.
Right. Wright would
write. Yeah, right. And right. Also, he's really smart. Remember, he was the engineer, space engineer, something like that. It was him and Josh Dobbs was the talk whenever Wright got signed initially. So probably the smartest guy in that locker room, even if he's not the number one kicker in that locker room.
Okay, enough kicker.
No, there's no such thing as it's like cowbell. You need to have more kicker. But let's talk pre-draft visits here, Dave, in Pittsburgh. We talked about on the Wednesday show, the ones that came in as we were recording in Oregon center, Jackson Powers Johnson, in Notre Dame right tackle Blake Fisher. Since then, we had at least three new names, or really three names added to the list. One we already knew in terms of being reported. But since then, Christian Boyd, the nose tackle from Northern Iowa, has come in for a visit. Ditto with offensive tackle from Oklahoma, Tyler Guyton. Reportedly, Cooper DeGene from Iowa, really interesting name, likely first-round player, is going to come in for a visit. Don't know the exact date on that. And according to The Athletic, don't have any confirmation on this or many details, but Georgia wide receiver Ladd McConkey had come in for a visit at some point as well. So if all that is true, we're at 28 names of their allotted 30, not including the local players, the Pitt guys, and local prospects. But overall, Dave, Pittsburgh loading up on offensive tackle even more, and now you add Cooper DeGene in that mix as well.
Yeah, what a interesting player, a guy that can move around all over, probably in parts of the secondary there, and you know, a guy that had to was battling what injury was he battling this offseason?
Broke his leg.
Okay, broke his leg. That's right. And just recently had his kind of his makeup pro day, I think, as well. So is he a slam dunk first round guaranteed guy to come off the board? I don't think so, but he's certainly a guy I think within the first 55 picks of the draft should be off the board.
Yeah, I think that'd be on the low end. The injury complicates things. The depth of the class overall maybe complicates things. And I imagine Pittsburgh wanted to get him in because he had been so limited in the pre-draft process. There was Jim Ward, an area scout at the Iowa Pro Day initially. But again, DeGene not working out was not cleared. As you said, he held his workout on, I think it was the 8th. What was that, Monday? And so it was actually Boyd and DeGene working out. I guess Boyd had been injured in this process as well. And DeGene had just gotten cleared less than 2 weeks prior to his workout, still put up really good numbers overall. So yeah, potential outside corner, slot corner, returner, although in Pittsburgh, in returners, defenders, they don't typically mesh with Mike Tomlin, Alan Rossum, the lone exception to that. So, you know, is he in the mix? Is this almost, you know, if there's a really big run on tackles, then you have DeGene in your back pocket. Is that maybe the calculation by Pittsburgh?
I would be surprised if he's in line for 20. It's not impossible. I mean, look, this is a guy that, especially early on in the process, was deemed a slam dunk first round guy to go somewhere in the first round, right? And it feels like as the tape and every, you know, the rest of the board has all caught up, it kind of feels like he's been pushed down. Would it be breaking news? Not overall, especially with his pedigree and what he accomplished at Iowa and all like that. But I got to admit, I would be a little bit surprised if the board broke wrong, if he ended up being the pick at 20 overall.
So what do you think the catalyst, the reason to bring him in is? Is it just as a get to know you because they didn't really get to know him in the pre-draft process?
I think that and with this slight possibility, maybe he did slide on down. Okay. It's hard to get a kind of feel on, to me, it's hard to get a feel on where he's going to go in this draft.
I think late first round is going to be my guess. I'd be maybe very early second round, but I think he's going to still be conventionally viewed as this first round kind of guy.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But you know, look, Malachi Corley. Now they do need a receiver as well too. And you know, they brought him in, but he was a guy that, you know, maybe they didn't get to learn all they wanted to learn about during the pre-draft process. So, you know, a lot of times when you look back at these lists over years, they're guys that they like, that they want to get to know more about, but that they have a good idea that they're probably not going to be able to draft, but they might be able to revisit 4 years down. You know, you don't know the plan for each one of these. They're bringing each one of these guys in, obviously, to get more information on them.
Sure. And I think that makes sense, because remember, Corley couldn't do anything at the combine. He had COVID, didn't get to weigh in or anything. And so those guys you kind of miss out on, you want to make sure you go back and double check. And DeGene, I mean, you got to, you know, see him at the combine, obviously, but didn't work out. So maybe you just want to get to know that guy more. But I mean, they brought in now, what, two first round corners in Nate Wiggins, Cooper DeGene. They were at the pro days for a lot of these top corners: Alabama, Arnold, McKinstry, Wiggins at Clemson, Sandersville from Michigan. I mean, I think we all can probably agree that offensive line is still the most likely path they take in round one, but maybe corner is that backup plan. Because what if there is a big run on tackles, sure, and right tackles in particular, right before Pittsburgh? That may put them in a difficult spot where, you know, corner becomes plan B.
Sure. Absolutely. And look, once again, DeGene is one of these guys that can move around in the secondary as well, too.
Right. And that will help for a team that needs help at outside corner, certainly needs help at slot corner, and anything else that he could potentially offer. So there is something attractive there. And again, he put up great numbers. What was his actual? I think he ran in the mid 4.4s and had a great vertical. And again, 2 weeks cleared. I mean, you talk about, you know, it's not just about being a great athlete that's going to produce great testing numbers. You got to train at this thing too. I mean, learn how to get into a stance and, you know, go through events and really work on it. And DeGene did not really have that opportunity, and he still put up fantastic numbers despite hardly having the chance to train coming off that broken leg. And so that's, to me, even more impressive to put up those kind of numbers at his workout, considering he really had no time to prepare.
Right. And to have the discipline to get himself back in, you know, have the ability to do that in the short time frame as well, too.
Now, Boyd's numbers comparatively were really poor. Again, you could sit there and say that he didn't have the chance to train much either. Not that we're super focused on, you know, shuttle times for him, but his numbers overall were poor. But that's a potential day three defensive lineman, small school type of sleeper that hopefully his tape is better than how he tested at his workout.
This is the kind of guy that if you don't get a guy like Mason Smith or Corcora early in this thing, that would give you a fallback option.
Is he more interior though than
a horror? Sorry.
Yeah. Instead of core. No, I got you. Cause I mean, Boyd came in around 329. He's a bit stockier. He kind of feels a bit more D tackle, like nose tackle. I mean, he came in, I think, what, 6'2", 320, 31 and a half inch arms. It almost feels like, I'm not even sure what the plan would be with him, but if he was less, you know, 4-eye, and if he was kind of more shade one tech.
And this was a guy that wasn't even at the combine, right?
I don't believe he was. Our notes here have him as a Shrine Bowl invite. Was he not at the combine? Was he snubbed?
I think he was snubbed, wasn't he?
I'll have to double check that. But again, he's been hurt in this process. I forgot, maybe it was a hamstring issue. And so he worked out on the same day with DeGene at Iowa, and then Pittsburgh bringing him in for a visit which is notable. They bring a small school guy for a visit. That is certainly something they don't do often. And so for that to occur says something about the interest they would have in him.
Agreed.
And yeah, I'm not seeing him on the combine list here. So appears he did not come in for a visit. Guyton, a guy we've not talked about much in that potential first round bucket. It almost feels like, oh, who was the guy last year? Anton Harrison, the tackle. It kind of feels like that, where it's an athletic type of guy. And you know, maybe Pittsburgh's shown some interest in him. Doesn't really feel like he's going to be the pick. Maybe that's my own bias for not just thinking about it more. He's huge. He's athletic. There's upside. I feel like if you want the high upside right tackle, you're going to go Amarius Mims over Guyton. But I mean, they're showing interest in both guys.
Yeah, he does feel a little bit of like Harrison last year, though. But I think he have a little bit longer. He's a longer guy than Harrison was.
Yeah, I guess I see it in the stance of like, a tackle option, but the Pittsburgh's shown some interest in, but really ultimately you don't feel like he's going to be the pick. I'm not necessarily comparing that in terms of how they play, but just kind of in the bucket of it's a kind of plan B tackle option.
Other than not having Tomlin and Khan at his pro day, he should check all the boxes there, right?
How old is he? Is he younger? I don't know if we have an age on him.
We should in the
Beast. If you, I don't have the Beast pulled up here.
I'll have to. I don't have that
one in our report. Maybe 22, turning 23. Just I guess Pittsburgh generally skews a bit younger. Not that they're beholden to that, but yeah. I mean, I think you know he's played right tackle. He's got size. He's athletic. Pedigree, visit. Certainly, there are key boxes being checked.
All right, I got like 86 tabs open.
All right. Well, either way, it should make too much of a difference overall. So want to mention that on Guyton for sure. I just don't get the sense he's the pick here. But if Fuaga's gone, if Fontenot's gone, you know, if Mims is not their guy, I don't want to discount Guyton either.
Okay, fair enough. I just pulled it up here. 21.87 with Guyton. Oh.
Okay. So born, pretty young.
According to Dane Brugler, June 11th, 2002. So he's about to turn 22.
Okay. So that actually fits into that well for Pittsburgh. They typically like a younger guy in the first round to develop and grow and have on that second contract for, you know, hopefully throughout his 20s.
Here's the thing with him. This is interesting when you get into a lot like Mims. He's a guy that doesn't have a lot of starts under his belt, just 15 career starts for Guyton overall.
Well, that almost mirrors Broderick Jones, right? Exactly. I think because Jones was at around 14, 15, and that's almost double Mims what he has. But point taken, yeah, not a ton of tape on him. There is certainly a developmental aspect to him. I think it's a worthy question. I was thinking about that some more. I mean, if Pittsburgh drafts a tackle in the first round, draft anybody in the first round, you expect them to play right away. If they draft the right tackle, I'm assuming they want that guy to play immediately. And do you have enough confidence in Mims and even potentially Guyton to play week one?
Now, wait, if you go back and parse kind of some of the stuff that Omar Khan has said, you know, want to get Broderick Jones to left tackle at some point, does not know. To me, in kind of parsing some of the things that Khan has said, they're open to taking a guy that maybe plays right tackle that might take half the season to get in there, like Broderick Jones.
Yeah, I get that. But
like we said, they're not going to go. I think they would have the willingness not to rush that guy. It doesn't mean that whatever kid that they draft wouldn't get the opportunity to come in and obviously compete for the job. But the way I took it, especially when kind of parsing several weeks ago from what Khan said, is yeah, we definitely want to get Broderick Jones over to left tackle at some point. And I'm paraphrasing here, to left tackle at some point, but it might not happen in so many words. It might not happen as quick as most of you, i.e. Alex Cazorra, wants it to happen.
Sure. He said eventually was the word right that he used. But if they do draft somebody, I mean, do you want to make this midseason switch of moving your right tackle over to left tackle and putting this rookie? And at least last year was a one-to-one thing. They swapped out a core four for Jones, and that was it. They weren't changing 40% of their offensive line.
I mean, look, in a perfect world, would you like Mims, Guyton, whoever, to come in right away and be that right tackle so you can get Broderick Jones shift over? Yeah, but I think you have to be open to the aspect that if you get a talented guy there that might need a little bit of grooming, coaching, and all first to make him one of the top two on this line, then you have to be open to that. Once again, look, in a perfect world, yeah, the guy that you, if you draft a tackle somewhere within the first two rounds of this draft, you know, you obviously give him the opportunity to come in and compete for a spot, but sure. I don't think you nail that to the cross either.
Yeah, I don't want to say that you write that in pen and you hand it to the guy. I'm just thinking about ideally, you know, what you're looking for, what your team needs, and a midseason switch would be messy. It's a fair point, and that's a good point by you. I mean, they could take that approach. They took it with Jones. He didn't start the year and had a heck if a core four doesn't say whatever he says. Does Broderick Jones even play more than the games he did in relief of Dan Moore early in the season? I don't know. So. That's a fair point. But I mean, I just wonder if that's going to be if they have an experienced right tackle versus an inexperienced right tackle, will the experience win out or will they try to play the long game of, OK, this guy is less experienced, but we think he can be better in year two and year three and hopefully year 10. And we're still going to go with the developmental type.
Yeah, and it's a good point. You know, had Jaquan Okorafor not run his mouth, how much longer would he have been in there? But you know, I don't think he would have sat all season.
I don't know. I mean, they were already in midseason by that point. So it would have, I mean, maybe Jones starts late in the season, but it's all, you know, irrelevant. It's all moot. Jones right. was the guy midseason. So we'll see overall. I had a question for you before we kind of get into center talk. And I thought that Ross and Joe, and check out episode 2 of the Depot Dive that went up yesterday on the site, on the YouTube channel. They had a really good discussion about Fontenot from Washington. Why do you think Pittsburgh is showing interest in him? And I say that from the aspect of where do you think they view his NFL position being? Because he was a left tackle at Washington, played a bit of left guard as well. Obviously, you know, some are projecting him inside the guard because of the lack of, you know, height overall, lack of size. In Pittsburgh, he won't be a guard. Do they view him as a right tackle? Would they try to flip him over? Do they view him as, you know, they even brought up center talk. Dane Brugler said that he thinks Fontenot could be a five position guy, a potential center. What do you think they come in on him?
Look, I've said from the get go with Fontenot that I think he's a guard. But
what do you think Pittsburgh? Because they can't see him as a guard and have this much interest in him.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, maybe once again, look, and he's an older, a little bit older guy too. Isn't he like 23 and a half or something mm-hmm. like that? I mean, it's a great question. Yeah, maybe it's one of more of this get to know kind of guys. And look, I mean, if he maybe they know about more about his ability, maybe to potentially play center. But look, this it gets real. I the hardest thing I have. With a few of these guys is playing them out of position, you know?
Right, which they would be doing. I mean,
right.
They can't view him as a left tackle and draft him as a left tackle because no. I know they do want to move Jones over to left tackle.
Right. And look, have there been great conversions before of college guys coming in that played left tackle that moved to right tackle, or right tackles that come in and moved to guard, or tackles that moved to guard, or guards that moved to centers, or centers that moved to guard? Yeah, it happens, and it's going to continue to happen. It just the Steelers aren't normally a team that does that though.
Although they just took their left tackle last year, made him right tackle midseason. Who never right. played right tackle. Almost an ounce in his life.
Right, right. But they, you know, other than that, I mean, they don't have in his history really of doing that. And I sure. think it's one thing to go, you know, look, but here's the thing that even Broderick Jones had said in not long after he had drafted, he had experience switching sides in practice.
Yeah, but practice at Georgia versus right tackle in the NFL.
Sure,
even at
sure.
Georgia, it's a different world.
But it wasn't totally foreign to him.
I know, but how many game snaps had he ever taken in college
sure.
at right tackle?
Right, right.
A couple, maybe.
Right. To me, it's maybe a little less messy than normal. But okay. I mean, it's still messy. I don't think you want to get in a habit of. Let's put this left tackle at center or right. you know, that kind of thing. Even though you'd be doing that with a guy like Barton. I mean, you're set. You're almost setting me up here
a little bit.
Personally, look, I am not shocked that Dane Brugler has Fontenot as his top guard prospect. Why wouldn't you, with a guy that moves the way he does, that lacks the overall height aspect of him, and doesn't have enormous arms. Why wouldn't you consider kicking that guy inside?
Sure, that makes sense. But from Pittsburgh's view, they can't view him as a guard and, again, have this much interest. So do they view him as a right tackle? Could they view him as a center? I mean, my guess would be they view him as a right tackle, just logically, because he's not – they'll move Jones over and switch. But then, of course, you're having an extra layer of projection of how this left tackle is going to look on the right side.
True. I mean, look, we never know the real reason why some of these guys get brought in and if they don't end up getting drafted. But look, you have to be, you know, there's only so many top really kind of tackle guys in each class on top of it too. So you better get to know them, you know?
Sure. Yeah, no, I get that. But he's kind of the outlier because the other guys they've looked at, Guyton, right tackle, primarily Mims, right tackle, Guyton, Fuaga, right tackle, and then you have Fontenot as a left tackle, Fisher, right tackle as well from Notre Dame.
All right. And look, I mean, if you know, talent is talent, and you can't be you never can be opposed of drafting a potential Hall of Famer. Now, I'm not saying Fontenot is that guy, but I mean, he is associated with the first round of this draft for a reason. Personally, I'm expecting a team to draft him to play guard, but I mean, you know, 6'3" is not unmentionable when it comes to guys. I don't think he's going to be at left tackle.
Why do you think he'd be at right tackle?
I think if a team does draft him to play tackle, you know, not kick him inside, I think a team could look at him as a right tackle.
Why not a left tackle?
He's just not long enough.
He's got longer arms than Fuaga.
Sure, but
how does the lack of length make it easier to play right tackle than it does left tackle?
I just think that's the way that you see these guys go.
Okay. Yeah, I think certainly a team could draft him as a guard. And you're right. There's something to be said about due diligence and look at the top guys and what if he falls and you want to, you know, even just be able to compare. Let's compare Fontenot to Fuaga and just kind of see how they think and systems and evaluate the tape, you know, look at some of the best guys. So I'm not knocking the interest in him. I guess my question is, okay, hypothetically, Dave, if I told you the 20th overall pick was Troy Fontenot, what position is he intending to play? What position is Pittsburgh intending to play him at?
If the Steelers drafted him, I would think that they would have the ideas of him playing right tackle.
Me as well. But it is curious because he's been a left tackle through most of his college career. All right. Coming off of that here and kind of segueing to the hills, the mountains you'll die on. I'm not even sure. You've done a ton of work on centers, on Graham Bart, on historical centers, on the NFL and center wide depth charts. You have been just burning the midnight oil and been some really great posts and some great information there. So you tell me, Dave, how do you want to start this conversation? Because it's like a big tree of center with a bunch of branches off of it. And so you tell me how you want to start presenting your thoughts on the center class.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure which way to kind of start with this. I do want to kind of start, though, with the aspect here of Graham Barton. And obviously, we've talked quite a bit about how little he played center in college at Duke. And since then he's played left tackle. I want to kind of focus in on too. I mean, you look at his athletic, I mean, the athleticism, especially his tackle tape. And then, you know, what he's done during the pre-draft process. I mean, all that matches up, with him as well too. When you have guys that are 6'5" and 3'8" at 313 that have the athletic profiles with him, and if he and obviously the arm length is a concern there overall when it comes to his ability maybe to stay on the outside there. Those guys get kicked to guard, Alex. Those guys don't get kicked inside to center for a. I've been trying to toss around how I'm going to which way I'm going to talk about this and have, you know, make an interesting discussion about Alex. Why don't you see a lot of 6'5", 6'6" centers in the league?
It's usually they're long enough to play tackle, and there's a premium, I think, on offensive tackle. If you're a 6'5", 310 pounder with 34 inch arms and you can move in college, you're playing tackle, where there's a premium on your ability to move and block and work in space, defend the edge. And if you can do that, you know, we can get away with the lesser athlete, quote unquote, at center.
That's a good point. And that's exactly the answer I was looking for here. When you're talking about college kids, especially kids that aren't at the right. top programs,
Georgia's.
If they have any size to them whatsoever, those guys usually end up outside at tackle there. And yeah, I suppose that was the case really with Graham Barton outside of his freshman season there. But so yeah. Hey, long story short, you don't get to see those guys at 6'5", 6'6", play center or really guard at the college level because they're the big kid. He's got to play outside there. So that's the first relevant reason here.
And I would say a bit of a leverage thing too. When you're facing some smaller D tackles, you can be a bit of a leverage disadvantage if you're 6'5" going against a 6'2" D tackle.
That would be the second thing, especially at the NFL level here. Mm-hmm. Low man wins, right? Yep. Especially the further you get inside here, and especially over the ball if you're having to play, you know, one of those kind of squattier defensive tackles, a guy that's and those guys generally go 6'3" or a little bit shorter, right?
Yeah, the big, you know, nose tackle line up head up right. on you. You got to get under them and, you know, defend the point of attack.
And the other reason you generally don't see and now look, there's like four centers in the NFL right now, I think, that are 6'5" or 6'6", but those guys I think were centers in college as well too. And played a lot of snaps there as well too. So you know how they are over the ball there. And the other aspect of this as well too, why you probably don't see a lot of 6'5", just one other reason on top of the other two that you've already mentioned is if this kid was a 6'5", 6'6", tackle with shorter arms in college, if they have any athleticism to them whatsoever, those guys get kicked inside, you know?
Yeah, look at last year, Peter Skoronski, same thing, left tackle, left guard a little shorter, moved inside the left guard for Tennessee.
Right, and here's another reason these guys get kicked inside the guard. You need two of them.
Yeah.
And there is there's a bit of a guard tax, right? You see some of these guards around the league. Yeah, it's obviously not as heavy as the tackle tax. Long, you know, I'm going to go to my key phrase here. Long story mm-hmm. short, man, if you're an NFL team, especially in what do you think about this guard class?
It's pretty poor overall. There's not many standout names, and one of the top names, Zach Center, was injured late in his Michigan career, so there are not many in terms of true guards, not the tackle conversion types. It is not a strong class.
My contention is that, I mean, I get why people want to put him inside at center and all like that, but man, if you think that this kid cannot be a tackle in the NFL and that is the consensus and he has the athletic profile that he has and you see it on tape, not only at tackle, but you know, at center as well too. Why aren't you in this class? Why isn't he the top? Really, why isn't he the top guard in this class?
It's fair. I think because he does have a center background makes it interesting. There is some center snaps, even though it was his freshman season.
400 something snaps. I mean, okay.
Yeah, it's not nothing. It's 400 snaps.
And they didn't stop. The earth didn't stop spinning when I watched that tape either.
Sure. Here's my point. Where did he work out at his pro day? What position was he working at? He's working at center.
But we haven't seen the whole pro day though. I mean,
he was snapping.
Sure. There were teams that probably want to see that. They want to know that the position versatility is there.
Yeah. And to me, all that really matters is what does Pittsburgh view him at? Yeah. Some team could view him as a guard, even though, you know, even if they view him as a guard, guards don't typically go super high in the draft either. Like center, they tend to settle and fall a little bit. Don't have the premium that tackles do, but all I care about is what does Pittsburgh view him as, and if they like him, they have to view him as a center, or they can't view him as a guard conversion guy.
Right. Look, if this, I'm talking across the NFL. I think there's potentially more than one or two teams out there that looking at Graham Barton as a guard. And I think they should. Obviously, if the Steelers draft him, they're drafting him to play center. I'm not disputing that.
Right. And to your point,
I'm just saying where is probably this guy's best position in the NFL landscape.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Maybe we should. I don't know why there has not been more discussion about him as a potential guard guy. But I will say, yeah, he's only played 430 snaps at center. But how many snaps at guard has he played? Zero.
Right.
So there's even more of a projection there.
Yeah, but I mean, you're asking him to look. He's a guy you can get on the move. You can pull him. You can play the power game with him. You can do all that kind of stuff with him and not have him snap the football as part of the process and have to think about it. You know, once again, if I have a guy at 6'5", 3'8", 313 that moves like this guy does and has a, you know, I mean, what are some of the guards? What are some of the arm lengths of some of the guards that are considered top in this class according to Brugler's? Let's go off.
I don't have it pulled up here.
Brugler's,
right? Yeah, I mean, if some team viewed him as a guard, that'd be certainly reasonable. But does that change the landscape of, you know, what's in front of Pittsburgh?
No. I'm not arguing the aspect that the Steelers should draft this guy as a guard. No.
I wasn't saying that.
I'm saying his market value as a first. I'm saying that adds to the potential of why Graham Barton could potentially be the first of those three that everybody's pigeonholed together. Graham Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, and Zach Frazier. Yet another reason why Barton would probably be the first one of those three off the board. You look at some of the arm lengths of some of these guys. Now there are a few on here. If you go, you know, Fontenot has what, 34.5, Morgan 32.78, BB, who some people think's underrated, 31.5. What do we say Barton's is?
32.78. I think he's right under 30.
Right,
he's right there.
That's almost 33-inch, right?
Yeah, the length is fine. No, what I was saying was, I wasn't saying that you're believing the Pittsburgh draft him as a guard, but is there a team in the top 19 that needs a guard that would view him as a guard? Is there a chance he could get snatched up by a team that views him as that? I don't know. I mean, maybe there is. I hadn't looked at a list of guard-needy type teams.
Now, here's the thing. I went down the rabbit hole as part of our talk today about, you know, I went way down looking at teams that might need centers. Specifically, I have not looked deep at how many potential teams might need a guard later in the first. Look, is a team probably going to take Barton as a guard or a center for that matter in like the top 15 selections, 16 selections?
Yeah, at least not top 10, just because of the talent that exists, all the quarterbacks, all the offensive tackles. So it's kind of like, it's really like 11 through 19. Does anybody need a guard that could potentially, theoretically, take Barton to play guard?
I don't know that, but I'll tell you this. The Dallas Cowboys need interior help, regardless if it's center or guard, I think.
Yeah, they lost Biadasz, and they went nothing at center, essentially, right?
Right. So, all right, that's the part of the hill that I hope to die on today is just saying, don't be surprised if a team in the first round drafts Graham Barton and calls, you know, with the idea of playing him at guard.
That's fair. I guess the question is he on the board at 20? Because if he's there, then the whole is he a guard, is he a center, it goes out the window. If Pittsburgh has to decide just whether or not they want to draft him or not.
If a team drafts him before 20th overall, I think it is indeed to play him at guard. Would you agree with that?
It depends on the team. But potentially it wouldn't shock me if some team said, let's play him at guard. It just depends on what they need.
All right. I guess what you're asking is, do I think Graham Barton will be on the board at 20? I think he'll still be, I think he'll still be on the board at 20.
Okay. I think we agree he'll be a first round pick. I think you mentioned that in our chat last night. He'll be a first round guy.
Yeah. I think because, you know, And once again, I haven't gone down the rabbit hole to see how many teams need guards or whatnot versus center. But I did, as the second part of this discussion, you know, I want to talk about the center position, and I want to talk about specifically about teams in the first two rounds, specifically within the first 50 picks of this NFL draft that could potentially use draft a center. And boy, did I do some homework on this. If you look at and all this, which is dangerous to do, assumes every team, you know, no team trades back and trades forward and all like that. I think realistically, and I went team by team by team by team to look at their center position, where they are financially. Could you potentially see this team or that team draft a center? My takeaway is that on the surface, there are four teams that really seem to have a very legitimate chance of selecting a center somewhere within the first two rounds of the 2024 NFL draft and ahead of the 51st overall selection owned by the Steelers. Those four teams would be the Chargers, the Cowboys, the Packers, and the Buccaneers. Now, of those four teams, because look, I mean, Dallas, once again, I mean, if you look at their current draft chart, they have Brock Hoffman as kind of their top guy. And
you look up who Brock Hoffman is.
There you go. And how are they at the other guard position as well, too? And the reason I bring that into play, because, you know, yeah, most people might have Barton listed as a center. What they have listed as a guard, you know?
Sure. Sure. What do they have at guard? Yeah, I mean, Tyler Smith had played guard, but I think he's going to be at left tackle because Tyron Smith isn't coming back. They got Zach Martin at right guard, but they got on the depth chart from our lads, TJ Bass and Asim Richards, a fifth-round pick last year. So they certainly could use a left guard.
Right. So, I mean, they could use a center or a guard. And why, yes. Why would, you know, if you're in that position, let's assume nothing happens with them in the next 2 weeks. Which at this point, who's even out there for them to sign to play center or guard that you could hang your hat on, right? Mm-hmm. If you're Dallas and you have a guy sitting there in Barton that could potentially play either center or guard for you, why wouldn't that be your guy?
It's a good question. Well, it depends on what are their other needs. Do they need something else?
Now, I haven't gone. I haven't. Yeah. You're going to have to give me a year to come up with that. With all the teams' needs properly ranked in relation to their I'll give you the results after the draft. How about that?
Yeah, you'll be 100% great. But they pick behind Pittsburgh, right? They're 24. And so they're right. Not a quote unquote threat to take somebody like Barton ahead of Pittsburgh, unless they, of course, trade up.
Right. Now, look, my contention with this is at 20th overall, the Steelers have a very good shot of picking any of those three, Barton, Jackson Powers, Johnson, or Frazier. All three of those could legitimately still be on the board at that point. I'm still of the mindset that they might go tackle overall. I think we both agree that Frazier would be a little rich at 20th overall. You could obviously make arguments for them to go Barton, or talking about the Steelers here, Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson at 20th overall. And we would have to listen to those arguments, right? Basically, more of this study in my eyes was to do who might, could any of those three fall to 51? Okay. And as part of that, I wanted to know is, you know, who of these teams could potentially draft a cent, you know, one of these three guys within the first 50 picks of the draft. And I think Dallas is a prime, and even if they wanted to go more true center, Jackson Powers Johnson could be a guy that they had their eye on there at what, 24 overall there. So, I think the Dallas Cowboys are a huge threat. In fact, there's that run there at 24, 25, and 26 of Dallas, Green Bay, and Tampa Bay, that because you have Brock Hoffman at center for the Cowboys, you have Josh Myers, a former, what was he? Was he first or second round, Myers?
I want to say he was like third round. Let me check.
Anyway, he is in his last year. Now, look, of those three teams, Dallas, Green Bay, and Tampa Bay, I view the Packers as the less likely of the three to draft a center. But I don't think you can rule it out when you kind of look at their need landscape roughly as well. Tampa Bay's got Robert Hainsey over there, and even though I liked Hainsey coming out of Notre Dame, he's probably not going to be the answer for them at center.
Can I interrupt the center talk with some additional center talk, please?
Sure.
Myers, by the way, late second round pick. So you're right, late second round pick. Pre-draft visitors coming in for Pittsburgh today, according to Ray Fittipaldo. Center Zach Frazier from West Virginia. Now he's going to be a local visit, but Zach Frazier officially coming in. Also, fellow Mountaineer corner Beanie Bishop and Cooper DeJean is in from Iowa today. So Frazier, Bishop, and DeJean.
All right. We had that report earlier in the offseason that we thought Frazier was going to be in, and then the guy deleted the tweet, all like that. So, I mean, do you have your shock face on that Zach Frazier's in for a pre-draft visit?
No, I didn't need the smelling salts for this one. And again, I mean, he's local, right? He doesn't even count against their 30, so there is no, I don't want to say penalty, but there's no cost to bringing him in.
All right. Back, really no surprises there overall, right?
Yeah, I don't know much about Bishop. That's one guy I'll have to learn. Okay. But again, he should be a local visit as well.
Okay, back to the center talk here. There is a better probably than average chance that Dallas, Green Bay, or Tampa Bay take one of Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson within there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, assuming the Steelers don't take one of those guys at 20.
Yeah, certainly teams to watch for.
Now, here's the thing. If Green Bay decides that they don't, Dallas's second pick in the draft is at 56 overall, and that's obviously behind the Steelers at 51. So if they bypass addressing one of those three players in Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, or Zach Frazier, they would have to trade ahead of the Steelers at 51, assuming that's when the Steelers, wanted. So 24 is a key spot in the first round of this draft. Green Bay has a 41st overall pick. Mm. So if they went another direction at 25 overall, thinking, well, we think there's a good chance of Frazier or Jackson Powers Johnson slipping out of the first round, they could still address that position at 41 overall. That becomes, I think, a key mark right there. 41st overall. Remember that number. Now, Tampa Bay, their second round pick is currently slated at 57th overall. So they're in the same boat as Dallas. If they did not address the center position at 26 overall, if they wanted one of those top three in Barton, Jackson Powers, Johnson, or Frazier, they would probably have to jump to at least 50 to do so. So if you're scoring at home, that becomes kind of murderer's row, I guess, at the center position at 24, 25, and 26. All this assumes the Steelers do not address that position at 20th overall. If all three of those guys slip through 24, 25, 26, it becomes a very interesting proposition. You get past all that. Now, once again, look, you could probably make a couple arguments for the Arizona Cardinals at 27th overall. And they also,
but the Chargers at 37, you mentioned the Chargers in that
right,
place.
Right, right. And Chargers, one of the four teams that I feel, because they did go out and add Bradley Bozeman because they have Corey Linsley retiring and all like that. They went outside and Bradley Bozeman, but that contract's super cheap. You could envision him being a placeholder, you know? So yeah, 37th overall is another key position within this. You know, this gets back in. Where am I going with all this? I think the key component here of a guy, I don't think Jackson Powers Johnson makes it to 51st overall. I have tried to entertain the idea that that would happen, but the closer I get into this thing and the closer I look to at other teams' needs and his talent. And I mean, when it comes to true centers in this draft, it's probably him, right? That would be number one. Guys that have actually played position a little bit most recently and all like that. It's hard to imagine Jackson Powers Johnson slipping to 51. We have entertained both the thought of Frazier slipping to 51.
Yeah, we've entertained it. I guess the question is, if you're Pittsburgh, do you want to bank on it?
Yeah, that becomes the question here. If you did not go center, and here's the second half of that study that I did that I put up yesterday here, looking at kind of an 8-year history of the center position overall. Historically, now look, you cannot rubber stamp these things from one draft to the other, right? Every draft is different and all like that. But one of the initial takeaways here that I had in here was that, where is it here? For starters, only 6 centers have been selected in the first rounds of drafts dating back to 2016. Let's see, where was the other takeaway here? Another interesting note about those 8 second round centers drafted since 2016, only 3 of them were selected before the 51st overall selection. Let's see. As another main takeaway, since 2016, a span of 8 NFL drafts, only 9 listed centers have been selected within the first 50 picks of NFL drafts dating back to 2016. And once again, 2 of those 9 players were essentially drafted to play guard. One of those was Cesar Ruiz. And who did I say the other one was? Oh, James Daniels. With the Bears there, because you know, we've, at least me specifically, have always pushed kind of that narrative that you see the center position get pushed down, right? Overall, looking at other teams' needs across the league and kind of theorizing, it's probably a 50-50 chance that Frazier survives to 51.
Yeah, and again, if you're Pittsburgh, do you want to? How lucky do you feel in terms of that happening?
Right. So, where would be the key area? Let's say they did not address the center position. Say they went tackle. Say they went Mims or something at 20th overall. How high up might this team have to go, and is it even feasible to go up that high to get, let's say, Frazier was your guy? I think the Steelers would be very comfortable with Frazier being their center. Would you agree?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one time? Pittsburgh being comfortable with Frazier center?
Yeah.
I think so, yes.
All right. And boy, you want to talk about people being mad in this fan base if they missed out on all 3 of those guys, right? Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, and Zach Frazier. Do you think they'd have to go up to 36th overall ahead of the Chargers? Because that kind of seems like the top. That seems like it. That would be the extreme realm of this.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but I'd rather be a little too aggressive than not aggressive enough and miss out.
What would it cost you to go from 51 to, let's say, 36?
I can pull up a trade value chart.
Even owns 36? The Commanders own 36, and you don't have to worry about them taking a center because they signed Biadez. during the offseason. And they also have a 40th overall pick. The Commanders do. The Commanders pick second overall, 36th and 40th overall. So they have 2 second round picks. Might they, and how many total picks do the Commanders have in this draft?
I can check. It looks like potentially 9.
And they're not what is the likelihood that they come away with this draft with 9 actual selections?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's a new regime, so they might want to hold on to their picks, but you know, take a quarterback at 2, you know. But point taken, they may come away with 7 or 8 picks.
What would it cost to go up to 36 from 51, roughly? Yeah, I'm only going to hold you to this if you're wrong.
I mean, again, trade value charts have been new ones using the old Jimmy Johnson one I pulled up here. The math alone would tell you one of your third round picks in terms of making the math work the best, probably 84. But I think realistically, you're not going to need to give up 84 to do that. Maybe 98. I think maybe you could try to, could you do something in the fourth round and maybe some sort of pick swap? I mean, teams have gotten really creative with those types of things. My guess is to do that. 98, I'd say 98, and maybe a pick swap where Pittsburgh will bump up a couple spots in a later round.
They don't have a fifth, right?
Pittsburgh?
Right.
Yeah, no fifth round pick.
I mean, could you maybe get a fifth back from them or something?
Yeah, let's see. Could you do, what do they have? What does Washington have here?
The Steelers are going to want to make at least seven picks in this draft, right?
I mean, we mentioned since, what, 04, they've done it in all but one draft, and that was 2020 when they didn't have a first-round pick in the Minka deal. Yeah, could you do – does this sound reasonable? Pittsburgh gets 36 and 152, which is in the fifth round. It's the second of 2 fifth-round picks that Washington has for, what is it, 51 and 98?
Well, does that sound feasible? You tell me.
Yeah.
I don't like playing around with that – end of the
no it seems reasonable to me.
I don't spend, in other words, I don't spend a lot of time studying a draft trade chart because it's so, you know, you go down so many rabbit holes. I mean, you tell me if you think that math works out. Doesn't Arjun have that kind of new app or something that allows teams to play around with trade values or something? I see he has that. Man, there's so many great tools out there now. Imagine having some of these things back even 5 years ago in this process. Does that sound plausible, at least in your head, in looking at the trade chart?
Yeah, I think it does. Again, trade charts, I'm looking at an older version. You see, right, there's new models and different numbers. But I think just how it sounds, what is that again? 36 and 152 for 51 and 98. That sounds, you know, realistic and plausible to me.
Yo, the only bad thing about it is you're letting loose of one of those third rounders, but at least you're getting you're getting a plug and play center out of it. And really, yeah, you're getting the most experience. Here's the other aspect of it. You know, Graham Barton had, what did we say, 400 something snaps way back in 2020 at center. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't. I mean, and look, Jackson Powers Johnson, his there's nothing there. As a whole, there's nothing wrong with his center tape from last season, right? I mean, he's a plug and play guy.
Yeah, I mean, center. There's some critiques in his game, but I mean, yeah, sure. he's in, you know, he's played center. You know, he's not a conversion type.
Right. Here's the thing, though, with him, he was only a one year center starter in Oregon. A lot of
how many starts does he have at center?
He only had, I wrote this up in one of the posts here. What does he have, 800 and something snaps at center?
Yeah, and how many snaps overall in his college career does he have? Because was he playing some guard before? Because he was more of a backup, and he kind of became a starter just this past year, right?
Right. He has logged. And a lot of people, this probably has gotten lost in the process here. And it's because he was, you know, as good as he was last year at Oregon at center. He's logged just 800. He played, I think, a handful of snaps in another year or two at center, and I added all those together. 837 total snaps in college at center over three seasons. Now, here's the caveat to it. He did play some center in high school.
Okay.
But for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, it's high school. Can I give you just another throw one out there for you? Could someone view Paris Johnson as a guard? He's playing guard the year before.
I entertained that when going down this rabbit hole, but at 6'3", 3/8", I don't think there's going to be teams that envision him as a guard. I think the team that drafts him is putting a C on that card with him.
I think so too. He has played some guard before. He played 400 something snaps in 2022, played almost 100 snaps in 2021. I agree. I think he'll be a center, but just to throw some different ideas out there.
Now look, and normally when you look at centers drafted within the first round of this draft, a lot of times, if you look back, most of these guys overall, except for who was the guy that I pulled out, Billy Price, remember him? Most of these guys in the first 50 or so picks of a draft that are drafted to play center have well over, man, I got so much, too much data here. Where do I have Price listed?
Like, it's like here. Coming out of your ears. You got so much center.
Yeah.
Center talker right now.
I'm going to even have to kind of search my own notes here real quick here. Okay, here it is. Here's also something that I went, whoa, this is going to turn into way too much information. Look, I've always viewed this show as me and you talking. If other people want to listen, let them listen. Here's also something to think about when it comes to those. This talks about those six first round centers drafted since 2016. Here's another part of this thing. I'm going off of what the NFL media sheet said coming out of each one of these drafts as to how each player was termed at their position in the draft. Okay. So if you have issue with me listing Isaac Seumalo as a center as part of this study, don't shoot the messenger here. All right. Mm-hmm. Because even if you go back and look at the live footage of that 2016 NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select center Isaac Seumalo out of Oregon State. Don't shoot the messenger. Okay. Everybody and their brother knew he was moving to guard, right?
Right. But he started, I looked it up, 23 starts at center at Oregon State, Seumalo.
Right, right. But all right, back to my nugget here. Something to think about when it comes to those six first round centers since 2016. All but one of them logged at least 1,433 snaps at center in college. The only one who failed to achieve that college snap threshold was Billy Price, who registered just 823 snaps at center in college. He's also been the least productive of those six first round centers since 2016.
Yeah, he was a bad pick by the Bengals, right? He went to Cincinnati and did not work out there.
Right. Not that you rubber stamp any of this across, Jackson have better measurables than Price did. I don't remember.
I believe so.
Price was
a smaller guy. Like even just the frame, like Johnson or Powers Johnson has a thicker frame. I don't know what this. He's heavier. He has to be heavier than Price.
Price was 6'3", 3/4", 305. 32-inch arms, 9 3/4-inch hands.
Yeah, Paris Johnson weighed in well over 300 pounds. What was his official weigh-in at the combine? I'll pull it up here. He weighed in at 6033, 328, with 32 1/4. So similar height length, but heavy, much heavier.
Yeah, a little heavier, a little shorter.
Okay, yep.
Look, that's not the... That's not part of my argument. That's not part of a hill that I want to die on being Jackson, because I mean, the tape is the tape with Jackson Powers. The tape is the tape with all these guys. But if you did have any concerns, it would be, well, he's not, even though he's the experienced at center more so than a Jackson Powers Johnson, and more recent as well too, it's still less than 1,000 snaps at center in college. Now you get into a guy like Frazier, man, 2,606 snaps at center. That tape is that tape, brother. That what you see is what you get with Zach Frazier, and it's not bad. What you see is what you get.
Yeah, there is really no projection. I mean, there's always a projection, but there isn't any. Can he play center over the long term? I mean, he has played center his entire career, and he does a good job of it.
And if you wanted one a center that could be plug and play, where there's almost, I mean, there's always going to be some projection and all like that. I mean, Zach Frazier is your guy. All right. Where is all this led us here? For a while, I thought maybe Frazier could slide to 51. And I'm not discounting, because I think that murderer's row that we talked about with the Cowboys, the Packers, and the Buccaneers right there, really going to set up to how far some of these guys fall. And even so, I could see one of these teams taking Barton off the board in the first round, even if it were at guard. I wanted to establish that as well too. So I think the question, and look, even if Barton fell out of the first round, how far is he going to fall? Right?
Yeah, not far.
I think there is some consternation there to have as a Steelers fan to think for sure that one of those three would fall to 51. I think the most, my most plausible thing that I think we have, and what I wanted to do is talk this through with you here, the second half of it here, which was, might the Steelers need to trade up to get a guy such as Frazier? And I think that's a plausible thing to do. And I think what we just said at that commander spot might be something to really, really think about if you're a fan of the Steelers here, assuming they don't take Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson at 20th overall.
Yeah, no, it's great research. It's great study by you. I think I think to me, the most value that I got, and I got value from all of it, but was that in-depth look at the other 31 teams and what they have at center or don't have at center. And there aren't a lot of teams as needy at center as Pittsburgh. The only other team that feels as needy as Pittsburgh is Dallas. Because even Green Bay, because Josh Myers has been a decent center for them. He's what, in the last year of his contract, though, on his rookie deal?
He's been serviceable.
Okay.
You could get by with him another year. Look, you could go, if you're Green Bay, you could go get a guy like Van Granger in the middle rounds, maybe to back Myers up, and even push him. And then obviously, if you did not hit with Van Pan Granger, you go into next year's draft saying, or free agency saying, we got to go get a center.
Yeah, or move Zach Tom because he's played everything. Because they need a left tackle, right? They don't. I mean, Bakhtiari's finally done. Like their O-line concern, I think, is tackle.
Right. That's why I said of those four teams, I view Green Bay as probably the less likely to get a center at that spot. But it would have been bias on my part to let one to say that they did not need one.
Sure. No, I get that. I'm just trying to think about, okay, who is the most needy team alongside Pittsburgh? And it feels like Dallas. And the good news is Dallas picks behind Pittsburgh in each round, but you do watch out for them at 24. Pittsburgh does not take a center, and see what they do there. I wonder, what have they been bringing in the centers for visits? Have they brought in Barton for a visit? I hadn't checked any of those things.
CBS Sports just, and I don't know how accurate this is, so I'm going off someone else's information here. Dallas has, according to CBS Sports, with what they've been compiling, they have brought in, Fontenot, Gonclaves, who kind of projects, I think a lot of people projected him as a guard. Jackson Powers Johnson and Graham Barton.
Okay, so clearly doing their work on interior type guys in this class.
And they should.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I really, really wonder, Alex, if that's the spot that Barton goes to. And they say
absolutely.
And they say, whatever he is, he is. If he can play guard, fantastic. We'll figure out center. If center's his best spot, we'll figure out the guard spot.
Because they need both. Because I assume Tyler Smith will kick back out to left tackle. Tyron Smith done, it seems like, not in Dallas anymore. And so that opens up holes at center after losing Biadasz and at left guard.
All right. No, I don't want to go down another team's needs too deep, but what are kind of their needs? I mean, they need interior help.
Yeah, it was like number one.
What are some of their other draft needs that you can loosely maybe identify?
They did not do much in free agency. That was the thing. Like, they really have a lot of needs because they were probably the least active team in free agency. I'm trying to find it would be a site that can show some team needs.
Just look at their depth chart real quick on our lads here.
Running back, they're in the talk for being one of the top running backs in round two, because they lost Pollard and Zeke's been gone. So Jonathan Brooks has been connected to them quite a bit.
I mean, we agree off if they go offensive line in that first round, it's going to be an interior guy, right? It's not going to be a tackle.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
They're probably not going to draft a wide receiver in round one.
Yeah. I mean, they could use somebody. It's a deep class, but yeah, probably less likely.
All right. They're not going to draft a quarterback, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if they dedicate that pick, what did we say? It was 24th overall.
Mm-hmm,
24th. If they dedicate that to offense, it's probably going to be an interior center or guard, right?
Yes.
All right. What about defense? I know there's all this stuff about Parsons. I'll believe all that crap when I see it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, could they do something in the secondary? Maybe it's safety. They had Bland and Diggs, probably not a corner that early. Could they go? I got Jordan Lewis. Yeah, maybe a safety. I'd probably say running back, safety, interior O-line are probably the areas for them to hit.
Top three needs.
Yeah, again, this is Steelers Depot opining on Cowboys needs. Maybe wrong, but that's kind of my glance at it.
That's really mine as well, too. And really, I mean, you look at interior there with Hoffman and Bass. I mean, that sticks out bad. Yeah,
they could go interior in the first two picks, take a center and a guard.
Right, right. They really could. All right. So another long story short here, if they did not address that with Barton, it really feels like one of those guys is coming off the board there to him, Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That certainly would make a lot of sense. Let me ask you one more kind of center draft related question. And this may be even more difficult to determine. What is the history of the tackle moving to center? How many of those guys have made that transition in recent years? I think I always think about Cody White here. He was a undersized tackle at Kansas State. He kicked inside the center. He's played some guard. I think more recently played guard, but starting his career, he was drafted to become a center for the Bears. Wonder how many other guys share that story.
I don't think you see. That's why Barton's been such a interesting thing, because normally you see the guards kick inside, you know, to center if they're too small, or that, you know, that kind of thing there. I don't know the answer to that. I will tell you this: when you get it, how soon we forget. And talking about Barton, remember last year Cody Mauch?
Yeah, North Dakota State, no teeth, fun guy.
Right, a guy that played tackle at in BSU, right? A guy that went into the Senior Bowl, everybody talking about, boy, how many positions can this guy play? And even got some work at center. And you know, I know even a few of us thought, man, could Cody Mauch be a center for the Steelers? But because of his size, where was he drafted? And where, you know, what position is he in the NFL? To me, that's even though it was a lower level school and all like that, I mean, the talent was still there. The size was still there. It just goes back to my argument. you know, you see these 6 foot five guys that can move and can play. If you can do it, you got to put that guy at guard.
Yeah. Again, I don't disagree. I don't know why there's not been at least some discussion about moving Barton to guard. There's nothing that really tells me that he couldn't do it or isn't worth the look at it. I just don't know how it changes the calculation for Pittsburgh, especially if, okay, Dallas is a threat, but they're behind the Steelers, barring a trade up. I mean, they're not necessarily going to be the team that takes away Graham Barton.
The threat is, my takeaway of all this, the threat is that Dallas is going to take one of Barton or Jackson Powers Johnson in that first round.
Right. But then the question is,
before going deep into this thing, I had all these delusions of grandeur that maybe all three of those guys fell out of the first round.
Okay. I mean, to me, if you're Pittsburgh, let's say you pass on center at 20, you understand not all three are going to be there at 51. The question is, will one of them be there at 51? You know, Frazier, Powers Johnson, or Barton?
And going back to one of your early mocks, right? And look, I have, and so have you. We have both entertained the idea of Frazier falling to 51. But I think as a result of me doing these exercises, especially with, now look, if Graham Barton was a slam dunk center, maybe that changes the conversation a little bit. But with him having guard, in other words, I have talked myself, because remember we had that talk about, you know, or at least I did, is Graham Barton being overrated, underrated, mm-hmm. all like that. I have flipped back to the side now of Graham Barton's right where Graham Barton should be, a first-round candidate.
I agree. I mean, I think he will be a first-round pick. I wonder, do you think the order of the guys go Barton is the first one taken of the three, him, Powers Johnson, and Frazier? Does it go Barton, Powers Johnson, Frazier?
It feels like it.
I wonder if it'll be, I think Barton will be the first. I'm pretty confident in that. I wonder if there's a chance Frazier could go over Powers Johnson. If there are some concerns about the lack of experience overall relative to Frazier from Powers Johnson, some of the injuries that Dane Brugler brought up, I wonder if there's a chance that Frazier could be next off the board and it goes Barton, Frazier, Powers Johnson.
That's plausible, especially if both those, you know, how does Tampa view both of those? In fact, who did Tampa? Does CBS have who? Tampa Bay. Listeners, we apologize. We've gone way down. But, you know, either you've turned this thing off or you're still listening.
If you're still here, you're committed.
It does not. Now, look, once again, we're going off of a list that we did not cobble together. According to CBS and the pre-draft visitors, look, here's the thing. If you look at technically at this list, oh God, we're going down rabbit hole. We're finding rabbit holes off of rabbit holes here. According to the CBS list here, the Cowboys brought in Jackson Powers Johnson. Who else brought him in?
Yeah, that's a good question. Who's been bringing him in? He's had a bunch of business.
The Steelers brought him in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bears brought him in. Remember Chris Morgan? And here's the other thing I went and researched. Here, let's.
I swear, if they watch the draft like Van Pran Granger and just all of this becomes moot.
I hope you tied a rope to me because I'm trying to get me out of all these holes. It's going to be tough.
Need a shock collar on Dave for some of these.
The other thing I went back and looked at is who was at that Oregon Pro Day? Chris Morgan was at that Pro Day, right?
Yeah, and were the Chargers at that pro day too? Didn't remember Chargers?
Not the offensive line coach that I remember. At least I don't think it was reported there.
Maybe a different school.
But there was very limited teams that brought in Jackson Powers Johnson for a visit. Not that that's the end all do all. We don't know how teams do their visits and what that means in relation to draft stock. But there weren't a lot of teams to bring him in.
He was just on with Kay Adams. He made mention something about visits, but he didn't. I don't know if he said the teams, but okay.
You're gonna have to find that now because I did not know that existed there. Find that for me and let's listen to that.
I mean, he didn't say anything. He didn't mention anything about Pittsburgh. I know that, and I think he just made a general comment to doing a lot of traveling. But I mean, does that mean three places? Does that mean 10 places? I'll double check. I don't know if he said anything super interesting, though.
All right. And as far as Barton goes, Dallas, Chicago brought him in.
Okay, Chicago's doing a lot of work on interior guys, so we got to look at Chicago and where they're picking in the draft.
And obviously, well, here's the thing with Chicago. And I put this in one of those breakdowns. They have the fear with them is them trading out of 9.
Right. Right.
That's where it gets messy with them. However, comma. Hold on here. Let me jump back post here. What I wrote.
Your computers, the hamsters in your computer have to be running overtime.
Oh man, I got a lot of RAM, brother.
700 tabs.
They own the number 1 and number 9 pick. And how many total picks do the Bears have in this draft?
It's looking
not
like,
a lot, right?
Oh yeah, it's only they got 1975. Is that it?
They got 122. Four, I think.
They got 1975 and 122. So nine is a good chance to trade down, get some capital.
Right. Now here's the thing. They went out and acquired Ryan Bates via a trade, and they had evidently had their eye on Bates for a while to hear them talk. And they talked also about Matt Eberflus said it's very important for a young quarterback to have that center experience to be able to call and make adjustments to protections to help and assist that way. We thought it was critical to get that piece, and Ryan Bates fits that bill. We're excited to have him. He's been a pro a long time, and he's moved along the line inside there at guard and center. So it's good to have the position flexibility as well. But yeah, that's a critical piece for sure. Eferbliss said, and the Bears only have, now, When did they acquire Bates? What date was that on? And was that after the Jackson Powers Johnson Pro Day?
No, March 4th they traded for Bates, so before the Powers Johnson Pro Day.
All right, so they still sent Chris Morgan out west after that. That's something that, and once again, I said that at the top of this thing was. Man, you want to get into teams trading out of positions and all like that. It gets real messy then. You know, could they feasibly trade out of 9 and pick up a pick? To me, once again, it becomes the magical spot. They would have to trade to that Commander's spot or at least get to that spot somehow at 36 overall to maybe ensure themselves a guy whoever drops, let's say either Frazier or Jackson Powers Johnson.
Well, they would be a first round deal. They might go down from 9 to, I don't know, making up numbers, Minnesota's pick. What does Minnesota have? 23? Yeah. What if they did something like that and they take Barton or Powers Johnson at 23? I mean, there's a million possibilities there. Right. It's interesting, though. Yeah, for a team that has 1-9 and 75 and like not a lot of glaring needs, they have Bates. They signed Coleman Shelton. They have Nate Davis at right guard on a deal. Why are they doing so much homework on these, late first round, early second round interior linemen?
Right.
Kind of interesting. They're not in really position ostensibly to take those guys. Are they planning to potentially take those guys or trade down possibilities?
All right. We have probably spent way too long of time on this, but you knew it was going to be a hot button of mine to discuss the center. Here's my kind of takeaway from this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm less positive now than I was in our last show that all three of those guys will be there on the board at 51.
Yeah, I'm sure I'd be shocked if all three were. The question is,
I mean, if one of the three is what I mean.
Oh, one of the three. Yeah. My stance has basically been the same. I think that this only furthers it, though, is that if you're Pittsburgh, you bypass center in round one. Okay, I get it. You got to make a play for a center in round two. You got to make a move up. And yeah, there's a cost in other positions. But if you it's a big gamble to hope and think one of those guys will be there at 51.
All right. Unless whoever you have, whoever the Steelers might have, let's say those three of their top three guys at center. Who would be the ejection seat? I mean, who would be the break glass in case of emergency center pick if all three of those guys were gone?
Yeah, it's a situation I hope this team does not find themselves in. I mean, if it's not them, I mean, there is some depth at center. It's not a bad class, but are you going to count on that third, fourth round guy to be your day one guy? Now you talk about Van Pran Granger from Georgia. You have Norzad from Penn State. I'm a big fan of Matt Lee from the U, previously Central Florida. There's other names. Tanner Bordellini from Wisconsin, although I think he's had some snapping issues at center. Do you want to go down that road again? I mean, there are names, but again, you're in the Kendrick Green standpoint to me of just a guy that probably should not be day one ready or, you know, ushered in as the starter, being anointed as the starter, or you have a Bordellini versus Herbig camp battle at center, which is not my favorite thing for a new offense, new OC, new quarterback, veteran quarterback, trying to make all that work. That scares me.
And I said this early in the show, this fan base is going to be hot if they don't come out of the early rounds of this draft without one of Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, or Zach Frazier.
Yeah. And they should be, I think, reasonably. It'd be a concern. What did Tomlin say? Do we have exact quotes of what Tomlin said about the plug and play nature? Do we ever get a full quote from the league meetings on that? I'll have to go back and see what he said. But he had said, this is a paraphrase, but after a couple centers in the draft, it will likely not be plug and play, was Tomlin's comment during the league meetings in March.
All right. So, and that even assumes they consider Barton a plug and play.
Yeah. Which, you know, who knows? But my point is, I mean, if we take that and they need a plug and play guy, I don't know how they could not come away without, you know, a Zach Frazier type in this draft.
All right. The hills that I'm dying on today, I think Graham Barton, if there's one team that takes him as a center, as a true center, it might be the Cowboys. Don't be surprised if maybe another team takes him in the first round as a guard. Because you just don't waste that on the center position historically, is one of my hills that I'm dying on there. The second hill that I'm dying on is I'm now not totally convinced all three of those guys, Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, or Zach Frazier, make it to 51. I think it's very plausible to think that the Steelers, if they bypass the center position at 20th overall, they are probably going to have to need to trade up into the second to get Zach Frazier or Jackson Powers Johnson.
Yeah, I think that's the play overall. So any final thoughts? I think that sums it up well. Really good research. I know it's a lot of time on center, but it is this team's biggest need. It's the thing we're going to talk about probably the most coming out of the draft in terms of who they got or didn't get and how it all shook out. And so I think it's important to dedicate a lot of time to the conversation.
I agree as well. Hopefully the listeners do as well. Let us know, did you hate or love us going down all those rabbit holes and spending? How long did we spend on that conversation?
45 minutes. Yeah.
All right. What else do we have to talk about, Alex?
Kind of wrapping things up here. I do want to note 13 players are attending the draft. It's a lot of standard fair names, the quarterbacks, the top receivers, et cetera. Only one offensive lineman in JC Latham, although reportedly from PFT, Joe Alt declined an invite to the draft, which is not uncommon for offensive linemen. Remember Joe Thomas on his boat, not going to the draft all those years back. The most interesting thing to me about who is going is Darius Robinson from Missouri, one of the 13 guys going. Generally, that not always, but generally that the NFL invites guys who they strongly believe will be first round guys. You don't have the whole long green room wait and day two. It's happened in the past, but I think the NFL is being smarter about it in recent years. So Robinson looking like a first round pick.
Wow. And I would have to think that's a team that thinks he can get after the passer. I mean, right. One of the things about him is I wished he was a little bit heavier. You know, I wish he had more sense. I wish he was more of that 3-4 eye techish, you know, but he's got his ability, and it's not a bad thing in his case. It's going to end up probably helping him is the fact that he does have that bend, that he does have that pass rush prowess that, you know, there are some teams that probably can look at him as a 4-3 end, you know.
Yeah, and again, he's probably heavier last year. I mean, in 2022, he's playing D tackle, and then he kicked out the end and probably dropped some weight. So I think he has the frame to add if a team wanted him to add weight and bulk back up.
Yeah, he's an impressive dude. I just don't think he fits ideally what the Steelers might need him to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was the one name that felt a little of the non-slam dunk first-round picks. The rest of them are Malik Nabers and, you know, Dunze and the quarterback. So that was kind of the outlier, so to speak.
And I think Mike Florio wrote something about the NFL wanted 15 guys there and two guys declined. And I know Jackson Powers Johnson was asked during his pro day if he was going to be there. And he said he doesn't look that good in the suit anyway. And he was just going to watch it from home or whatever and all like that.
Who were the two that declined? Alt was one. Who was the other? Brock Bowers? Brock Bowers, declined. So
yeah, he already knows where he's going.
Where's he going?
Cincinnati. Bengals,
Jets. Okay. All right. We'll see.
I think I've said that since day one. Yeah. He's gonna end up in Cincinnati there. Okay, what else do we have to talk about, Alex?
I think it's probably time to start wrapping things up, get through some reader emails, and close out today's show.
Levi Walls visiting the Broncos. Mm. That's not, you know, people say good, I think, would mostly be the reaction there. What did Armon Watts say?
Oh, yeah. Armon Watts said that Pittsburgh showed interest in him, but the Patriots showed, more interest in him. Does that mean financially? It would probably appear so.
yeah.
But Watts, said that Pittsburgh had some interest, but ultimately New England was his next place to go.
I don't doubt that the Steelers wanted him back, but the Steelers probably wanted him back on a veteran benefit deal, and he got a little bit more than that with the Patriots. So
what did Mon Adams get? 2 years, $5-6 million? What did he get?
6 million? 5 million, wasn't it? Let's see. That deal ended up being 5.25 million.
Got to imagine they probably offered Watts the same structure and just gave that to Mon Adams when Watts said, I'll take a 3 million from New England instead.
Possibly.
He might guess. Anyway, he's in New England now. Pittsburgh signed Dean Lowry. What did Dean Lowry, he signed for 2 years, 5 million? Five and a half?
Lowry was very similar. Let's see. 2 years, 5 million.
Yeah, that has to be right around what they offered Armon Watts, a 2-year deal worth 5 to 5.2 million. And Watts said, I'll take the 1-year deal for 3 million from New England.
Right.
All right. Okay. Reader emails and close out today's show.
All right. I'm interested in what the listeners think about today's rabbit
Watch hole. Them just not take any of these centers and just take, somebody in the third, fourth round. Let's just watch that be the outcome of this whole thing.
All right, Brett Nile, Glover question. I know there's PTSD about Kendrick Green, but I think it's important we learn the right lesson. Mistake was drafting Green, not to move to center. He was equally inept at guard as he was center. His failure should not be taken as an indication that it can't be done either by Barton or even Herbig. It may not work out either case, but Green should not be used as a reason it won't. My contention about Barton, as I stated early in this show, is that with that size and all that he has and the tape and all like that, his teams ought to be looking at him as guard. He says, remember that when Dawson retired, they brought in Jeff Hardings, blah, 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 moved him to center. Day may remember, but for a couple of years before injuries derailed him, that was a great combination of Hardings, Faneca, and Smith. The team has a lot of interest in Glover, and Alex thinks he would do well to kick inside the guard. My question is does he have the traits to kick into center? Could they be looking at him as a center conversion? Obviously not day one ready. Basically, this is about Glover.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
no,
you've watched more of him than I have.
Yeah, he's not going to be a center. He's not bendy enough, and there's going to be a leverage issue. Even a guard, there could be a leverage issue. I just don't think he had the functional lateral athleticism to play left tackle. He's got length and size and uses it well, but he gives up the edge against those speed guys too often. Got to work on his punch, and so that's why I thought he'd try to kick inside the guard. But no, he's not a center. And even if he was, again, as the reader acknowledged, he's not day one ready. I mean, with Herbig, could he do it? Maybe, but do you want to bank on that? Do you want to put all your chips into the Nate Herbig? Guy who's been a career guard. It's not like he's a rookie coming out and can learn the position. I mean, he took reps last year, but I mean, is that your plan? Is that, you know, I'm not trying to sound so luxury, but just talking to Pittsburgh, not to the reader, but is that your plan for Nate Herbig to hopefully be the guy?
Yeah, I'd much rather have him be in the backup.
Yeah. Yeah.
He ends this real quick. Love your work and can't wait for the Dave T. Memorial Draft Roundtables to start. And, you know, we've had a couple other people. I think we failed to get to their emails, but I've come across them that mentioned, hey, remember the old days with Dave T. It is appropriate time in this thing right now to remember Dave T. and all the great times that we had with Dave T. on this show. And I miss those, Alex. Mm-hmm. Give him one name, get five back.
I'd love to know his thoughts on Graham Barton in the center guard conversation. Yeah,
you know what? He'd probably be in the camp of plug and play him at center. I can envision Dave T saying that, you know. But yeah, I think it's appropriate time to, man, Dave T really provided a lot of great content overall and throughout the years and specifically on our show. So shout out to Dave T. Matt Palmer writes in, hello, David Ox. If we could pretend we were in a draft room and Con swivels his chair towards you and says, Dave, you tried to tell us about George Kittle, and Alex, you tried to tell us about Jonathan Jones and we didn't listen. Who is your guy this year? Who is the guy, Alex, that you said you better go get this guy?
I don't know if I have some of the draft crushes this year I've had in years past. And yeah, Jonathan Jones was one of those hits that I had. But I think one guy that I'm a lot higher on that it seems like the NFL, at least based on what the draft picks say, and we'll see how draft weekend plays out. Maybe not for Pittsburgh ultimately, but Brandon Coleman from TCU, left tackle, guard, big, strong, physical, nasty. He can play tackle. I think he's ideally best at left guard. Played well against, watched the Michigan game in 22 in their playoff run, a great game there. So I think he could play a tackle, but you put him left guard. That dude's going to be a stud. People are projecting him to be a day three guy, fourth, fifth round. I put a second round grade on him all day. That guy's going to be a stud left guard for whoever takes him.
I don't have that kind of guy, you know, that I'm nailing myself to really overall. But man, I tell you, that Mike Sanders, still, I am intrigued by that kid. Just all that you can do with him in a defense, the physicality for the guy, for a guy his size, his ability to cover. And normally for me to go after a 5'9" 3/8" guy is rare, you know. I will say this. I am very, very intrigued. And the deeper I get into Andrew Phillips, and I think Dane Brugler brought this up during a recent podcast interview somewhere on the internets. And don't sleep on Andrew Phillips. That, you know, and it's rare for me to go corner too. You know, that's normally not my hot spot overall when it comes to this thing. So I think those are two guys that I'm not nailing myself to the cross to or whatnot, but I find them very, very, very intriguing overall.
Yeah, what did Brugler say? He didn't think Phillips would get out of the second round. Is that what he said?
I think that maybe be what was what he said.
Yeah, I mean, I viewed him as a day two guy. I know Jim Nagy talked about him. Just wonder, he lacked production. Well, at like 10 pass breakups the last 2 years combined, zero interceptions. There were some penalty issues. I don't have a firm place on whether or not I'm thumbs up or thumbs down on Andrew Phillips, but we would have liked to see some more production. But this guy played a ton in the slot. I think it was a top 10 corner across all of college football last year in slot snaps. Pittsburgh brought him in for a visit. If it's not Sanders still, if they wanted a bit more size overall, I could see Andrew Phillips. Certainly, I was thinking third round, but now you think about, okay, will he actually get to 84?
Yeah, I was entertaining that thought of him kind of sliding on into a little bit mid-round, if you will. But now, deeper get into this stuff and you hear some of the buzz about him, and you do kind of wonder, might Max Melton end up having to be that guy?
Yeah, which would also, I mean, or will it be any slot corner? Again, something's got to give here. With all the needs, they cannot address everything within the top four picks. And so I wonder, barring a trade back, what will be getting the short end of the straw.
And as usual, the deeper you get into this thing too, and you all the buzz 2 weeks ahead of the draft, you have 100 players going in the first 50 picks.
Right. Guys will fall. Receivers are going to fall. Tackles are going to fall. Quarterbacks are going to push guys down. There are going to be some great players going late first round, early day two, because of the depth and the quarterbacks that will inevitably just push down some of these top names.
All right. Stu McPherson from New Zealand, new name. I don't remember seeing before, about ChatGPT. He said, just a tip, you can use ChatGPT to help answer some curly questions you have. I used it to answer the question of when the Steelers traded down in the first round. He says, results. The Steelers have traded down in the first round of the NFL draft a few notable times. He says the 1970 NFL draft, they traded their first round pick 21st overall to the Green Bay Packers in exchange they received. Now, I have not fact checked this. We're taking ChatGPT for as a source here. Traded down, received a third round pick and linebacker Leroy Caffey. With the acquired pick, Pittsburgh selected defensive tackle Ron Shank.
Tackle?
Yeah, he's a wide receiver, but he's got, I don't know if he mistyped this or what, but
I'm guessing that that's the ChatGPT misquoting it. And I'm not seeing anything on Wikipedia that notes a trade. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but
he says that. 1970 draft. He says the Steelers traded their first pick, 21st overall, to the Green Bay Packers. Are you seeing any of that in Wikipedia?
You said Green Bay was picking at 21 when they traded up?
And he said this is traded down.
Yeah, Pittsburgh traded from 21 to 28 with Green Bay. Is that what he said?
I guess he says it received a 2007, a 1970 third round pick.
Okay, because Green Bay did not pick at 21 that year. Cleveland picked at 21 that year. So may not be accurate. Does not appear to be accurate.
The second one he has is the 1987 NFL draft. The Steelers moved down in the first round. They traded their 10th overall pick to the San Diego Chargers, attaining the 16th overall pick and additional selections in later rounds. With the 16th pick, Pittsburgh selected cornerback Rod Woodson, who became a Hall of Famer. Research that.
You said the 16th pick?
He said they traded their 10th overall pick to the San Diego Chargers in 1987, attaining the 16th overall pick.
Hold on. That does not seem right. Woodson went 10th overall. I think ChatGPT is giving you some really bad information there, my friend.
All right, Stu. That's why you got to be careful here when using ChatGPT. Let's see. Thanks for the email, though. Valley Ford writes in, hey guys, love the podcast and all that you do for Steeler Nation. An idea for a draft day trade keeps staring me in the face from the endless mock drafts and mountains of draft analysis. The Green Bay Packers are an excellent trade partner for some NFL style. Let's make a deal. The Packers need a new left tackle. They're rebuilding their line and have Tom and Walker at the tackle positions. This is a great opportunity for the Steelers to unload Dan Moore and clear the left tackle position to allow Jones to move into his more comfortable position. With the loaded draft class along the offensive line and receiver, there's great value, blah, 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 at the end of round one, throughout round two. With the 20th pick in round one and the 51st pick in round two, the Steelers can make an additional trade with Green Bay. He says the Steelers pick 20th. The Steelers pick 20th and 51st with Dan Moore. The Packers pick 25th and 41st, third round pick 88. This would allow the Steelers to pick up some draft capital. Boy, this is it is hard to follow, Valley. And you're including Dan Moore in there. We've been asked about Dan Moore. I understand all the stuff and the scenarios of Dan Moore, but man, it seems unlikely they're going to move Dan Moore regardless of what they do in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned Green Bay needing a left tackle, but they could just go draft a better left tackle than trading for Dan Moore. They got Rashid Walker. There's maybe a little closer to Dan Moore status. So, I mean, again, you could come up with a million different scenarios. I think if something were happening with Dan Moore, it'd be a camp thing, post-cut late August when you have a proven swing guy, say a Dylan Cook or somebody else emerges. I don't think they're going to trade Dan Moore on draft night.
All right, one more from Lenny Barsikowski writes in, Dave, would you or Alex be upset if we repeated last year's draft pattern? Because I could almost see it happening again. First round offensive line, second round cornerback, third round D line. Secondly, while I understand trading Deontay, if we draft a cornerback to play outside and he has Wiggins in parentheses, what was the point of getting Jackson in return from Carolina? He says, I really like Omar, but this was not a good trade for us. I also agree with you that the Steelers blew it in not signing that center out of Buffalo, Mitch Morse. If we end up having to trade up in round two, every team in the league knows who we're coming to get. Parentheses, he has Frazier. Dave, when will you release your first mock draft? My first and only mock draft will be, can I release it after the draft?
I know you could if you would.
It'll be coming up soon, Lenny. Second, is it unthinkable the Steelers go offensive line first round, corner second, and D-line third? No, I don't think that's implausible. Is that a word?
It is now. No, it certainly is. Just two are the names. And is it O-line? Is that tackle? Is that center? If it's tackle, where's your center? But no, the layout is not unrealistic.
What do you think about his statement about, secondly, while I understand trading Deontay, if we draft a cornerback to play outside, what was the point of getting Jackson in return from Carolina? He does not like that trade still. He also agrees. look, I think they probably thought Morse was maybe – they probably thought they were going to get a deal done with Morse.
Yeah, but they were trying to get a cheaper term to not have to lock him in as the starter. And I don't think those were terms that Morse wanted to deal with. What's that?
And I agree with Lenny, too. If the Steelers go up in round two, everybody knows who they're coming for. Yeah, it's probably Frazier.
Who cares? If you get the deal done and he's on the board, you get your guy, the whole world can know. Who cares? You got your guy. I didn't like the Deontay deal either. Although with Dante Jackson, you know, that's a 1 year thing. And so it's not, you know, he's not here for four or 5 years. And so you can draft Wiggins and play in sub packages. Is it the best use of resources? You could debate that. But, just because Jackson is there doesn't mean you can't take an outside corner. If you don't take a corner this year, outside corner becomes a big need next year.
Agreed. Thanks for the email, Lenny. And look, I don't think you can roll out, you know, technically O-line corner. D-line is the first three picks. I mean, I wouldn't bet my house against that.
Nope. Possible.
All right. Anything else late breaking here, Alex?
Nope. I think we're good. We'll come back on Monday. I think I'm going to do my mock, walk the mock on the 19th. And so next Friday for a live draft, I'll put out details next week, but I joined a room, a lobby last night. So 1 week from today in the evening, sometime around 6 o'clock, I think it is, will be my walk the mock 2.0. Yep.
And what about the Super Bowl of draft roundtables?
That'll be tentatively scheduled for we can do May 22nd and talk about what happened after, but April 22nd, that's a Monday. We're efforting to bring as many of the Depot crew, could be a giant, giant call, a true roundtable, but that is our plan right now.
This thing might hit 3 hours. If we get as many of these guys in there on this roundtable as we're hoping to get, they're going to be, and you're going to hear from some guys that you haven't heard from before on this show as well too. A couple of our draft profile guys as well too. So a couple of these guys really aren't Steeler fans either. So that will be an interesting perspective if we get some of these guys in there. So get ready for that to be a monster show if we get the if we get it scheduled the way we'd like to get it scheduled. All right. Anything else? I'll get us out of here.
Nope. That's all. Let's wrap things up.
All right. As soon as you end this show, send us an email, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com, assuming you got through it all, and say, you guys are out of your ever-loving mind. What a waste of time talking about the center. That center position talk and draft talk that and rabbit holes you went down. My God, tell us to either get on with it. You know, you didn't enjoy it, or say, man, that was absolutely fantastic. I enjoyed every bit of it, or it was just sort of meh. I'm interested to get some feedback on this. Cause once again, I just get to talking with Alex on this thing sometimes, and I forget we have a listenership and all like that. But send us your thoughts on what you thought about the middle part of this show. You can follow me on Twitter /X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email us show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free button or ad-free version, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button up right, navigational bar, follow the directions that way. Whew. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.